So today we actually complete the offerings on prayer. Now there is a next week I'll meet again with you if you want to come, and we'll do the Our Father, which is the last of the sections in the Catholic Catechism. Today I'm going to cover briefly two points that we nearly covered last week, and then go into contemplative prayer. The first thing I want to look at is when you make other people's prayer your own. I touched on this when we did liturgical prayer last week. That's the largest example of this. But, quoting if I may from, well, a simple way of praying that is available to anyone is to repeat prayers composed by other people. Excuse me, you probably all have your favourites. However, since prayer must come from the heart, it's important to find prayers that speak to our heart individually. Prayers that we can make our own and that we can pray honestly and attentively. So if someone gives you a prayer, and sometimes people do, and they say this is a really important prayer, and if you pray it, you'll get certain benefits from it. When you pray it, if it doesn't actually touch your heart, give it to someone else or just drop it somewhere. There's no prayer that's magic, and there's no prayer that does good on its own. So give your heart a chance, you know. So find one that you love. Here's St. Teresa of Avila, who's a wise girl, and she says this. She assures us in her way of perfection that while you are repeating some vocal prayer, it's possible for the Lord to grant you perfect contemplation. She continues, you are enkindled in love without understanding why. You know that you're rejoicing in the one you love, but you don't know how. You're well aware that this is not a joy which you can attain through understanding. You embrace it without understanding how, but you do understand that it is a blessing that you're receiving. She goes on to say, this is perfect contemplation. So obviously we're not talking about contemplation in any whopping big sense. This is a simple thing that everyone in this room has experienced, momentarily perhaps. In contemplation we can do nothing. God is doing everything. This is God's work alone and far transcends human nature. Now, I'm suggesting this. If you find that this way of praying appeals to you, and it appeals to many people, and it's a natural way of praying, you'll find encouragement from Thérèse of Lisieux, who writes this. Sometimes, she says, when I'm in such a state of spiritual dryness, not a single good thought occurs to me, I say very slowly the Our Father or the Hail Mary, and these prayers suffice to take me out of myself and wonderfully refresh me. It's important to hear, I find it important for me, to hear the saints talking like this. Otherwise we can think our prayer isn't much good. Well, who cares whether it's much good? We don't judge our own prayer. But here's Therese, every now and then all she could do was just say slowly the Hail Mary, and she found that was prayer. It's good enough for my grandmother who couldn't read. Why wouldn't it be good enough for me? While any prayer can be helpful here, there is, of course, a special place here for the prayer given us by Jesus himself, the Our Father. And next lecture will be entirely on that. Much of Teresa's book, The Way of Perfection, is devoted to showing what a rich prayer this is. In fact, she begins her book, The Way of Perfection, and all the second half of it is about the Our Father. Included among her many pieces of advice is this beautiful advice. She says, if you're to recite the Our Father well, one thing is necessary. You must not leave the side of the master who taught it to you. That's actually very beautiful. If you're going to say the Our Father, have Jesus sitting next to you while you do it. Because he is next to you while you do it. Praying the Our Father in this way with Jesus can help us to focus our mind and heart on the movement of Jesus' Spirit drawing us into his prayer. Brief, but that's all I want to say to you about sometimes called vocal prayer, but you know what I'm talking about, are prayers that someone else composed and that might help you or me enter into prayer. They help the saints, they'll probably help us. Another thing to talk about is meditation. We did that last week. The third thing I want to speak about before moving into contemplation is called an examine of consciousness. We all started examine of conscience. Well, just shifting the word a bit because it's richer. The problem with examine of conscience is, if you're anything like I used to be, or still am, I guess, but the way I was brought up, examination of conscience is all about what sins I've committed, isn't it? This is not all about what sins I've committed. It includes that, but it's bigger. So I'm saying examine of your consciousness. I'm quoting from the book Yielding in Love. It's chapter 14. Bits of that I wrote in that prayer book on prayer. Good musicians take care of their instruments. Violinists are constantly checking the tension on the strings to keep their violins in tune. Even when you go to a big concert there, aren't they? To make sure they're all on B flat minor or some blooming thing. So they're all got the same thing going. In a similar way, if we're committed to a life of prayer, we need to monitor our lives. For the quality of prayer is best assessed by examining our attitudes and our reactions. All the mystics and everybody who writes on prayer tells me the best way to judge your prayer is not by your prayer, but by your life. So if your life is becoming gentler, humbler, more thoughtful, whatever, then your prayer's good. And the best way, by the way, to examine your life is to examine your prayer. So don't examine them by themselves, because you might think your prayer is beautiful, but if everyone around you is telling you you're becoming too frenetic, too self-centered, too judgmental, too narrow-minded, for God's sake, listen to them, and it's a sure sign your prayer is wonky because God isn't part of it. That's tough, but it's true. Is that all right? Because if you are praying with God, it's going to have effects on your life. Jesus said, by their fruits you'll know them. So let's spend a bit more time on this, because it may become a practice that you might like to make part of your daily life. It's good to take time regularly to reflect on our lives with a view to noticing the movements of the Spirit of God in our hearts. Because it's always gentle, and we can always miss it. And our attention or lack of attention to God's presence and inspiration. This practice of regular reflection is sometimes called the examination of conscience. This is accurate as long as we don't limit our focus to observing where we've gone wrong. In fact, when I first learnt this years ago, when I was the first time in a parish at Coogee, 25 years ago it was, and the children were well trained by a catechist, obviously, And in those days, they could come to any priest they want, and I had this darling little boy who liked me and wanted to go his first confession to me, so he came in and he did. And he told me the naughty things that he'd done, which everyone in this room did when they went to first confession. There's a limited scope for what children can do, and we all do what children do. So you can, I don't have to break confession to tell you what he told me. You can just imagine it. Then he ended up, he told me some good things about himself. And he was lovely with his grandmother. And he had a few other things he told me. I thought, that's very beautiful. That's actually a heck of a lot better than what I did for my first confession, which, by the way, was a bad one. It was. My first confession was a bad confession. Sent me into a year of scruples with that little... haven't had them since, I can tell you. But anyhow, I was a little chided. Because I had this whopper to tell, because it's important, first confession, and, you know, pulling my sister's plaits, and, you know. But there was one thing in my life, I don't know, when I was three or something, that I thought, this has got to be, this is, I mean, this is something, oh, you know, I mean, this confession isn't mucking around. So I had this one ready to tell. And I went in and I knelt down and I didn't close the door properly. And sitting no further away than you're sitting there, Darcy, was my best mate, waiting to come to confession. And I thought, this enormous sin, just enormous, I didn't mind telling the priest, but I didn't want him to hear as well, so I didn't tell it. And then I spent the rest of the year coming to confession, poor little kid, every week saying, oh, I didn't tell this in confession, and that was a really bad... Children are very sensitive and they've got to be treated with so care. I better tell you what I did, I suppose. A group of us got down behind the hedge and pulled each other's pants down. And I didn't know what to look for. And I didn't see anything. But I thought, that's got to be pretty bad. So that was my... So, sorry, back to the lecture. But here's a little kid going through all this trouble because of something that was... Oh, dear. Now that I've got that off my chest... Now, do I get your absolution, Aileen? But this little kid... But why I told you that was the next day I'm walking through the playground at the primary school, and this same kid ran up to me and he said... Oh, he said, I forgot to tell you something. And, of course, my mind flashed back to me. And I'm thinking, oh, what the poor little kid, what he's been through, you see. And what he wanted to tell me was, I'm really lovely with my grandmother. And I thought, God, this is so much healthier than anything I was trained to do. Here he was, itching to tell the priest everything about his... And he told me something good. And isn't that better than telling me something bad? Because the bad usually... Right, so there we are. That's enough. I've broken the seal of confession and I've told you my worst sin of my babyhood. Oh, yes. So we must learn to be sensitive to the light even more than to the shade. For if we neglect to look for the light... We're in danger of stumbling from darkness to darkness and from sin to sin, which seriously takes me back to the earlier question on original sin. Surely the key reason for sin, actual sin, is people's poor image of who they are. I'm certain of that. You may not be. I think they don't know who they are. People don't know how beautiful they are. They're down on themselves. They don't know what freedom... And so they end up substituting behaviour for real behaviour and struggling and stumbling and all this. And as a priest in confession, what you've got to do all the time... And it's so easy to do because it's palpably clear... This humble person, broken person, telling you the dreadful things they've done, and they haven't the foggiest idea how beautiful they are as a soul, you know. Do you get me? And you've got to tell them that. Because if they knew that, they'd think, but they don't know that. So we, human beings, that's original sin. That's part of the mess we're in, is this stuff. And isn't that why Jesus said, love one another as I have loved you? And isn't that why he said to the woman in adultery, I do not condemn you? but sin no more. Isn't that why he could speak to the thief on the cross? We've got to take Christianity really seriously, and you all know it's actually about real love, not flattery or it doesn't matter or do what you like, but it's love that enables me to be good. The rest just plunges me into substituting for good. And I don't think I'm any different from any of you. A few moments of reflection over our day provide the opportunity to note and relish with gratitude moments of communion with God that you had on your way here this morning. Little moment of communion with God. And if you don't notice it later, you'll forget it by tonight. It'll be gone. And it's a pity to forget moments of grace. Such reflective prayer provides the opportunity also to notice and express our sorrow for the times when we were inattentive. You just weren't listening. And then you hear it again and you think, oh, that's right. It makes us more sensitive to the action of God in our lives, and we get to know God more intimately by reflecting. That's why you look at photos, I think, and you remember the holiday and it gives you some feeling, or you remember the baptism that you're at, or you remember your wedding photo and you think, oh my God, I said I'd love him forever and I've been a bit rough lately, a bit neglectful, you know. So then you do something beautiful. And he thinks, maybe I could bring her some flowers. It's been 30 years, but, you know. Oh, whatever it is. But it's the sensitivity stuff. And blokes are so different from men. Oh, you've got to shoot me, I'll get married. But we are, aren't we? So different. And I'm thinking of people I know really well who are married and talk to them. They say, of course I love her. Like, I'm here, I do this, I don't do that. And here's this celibate says to them, when did you last actually tell her you loved her? Oh, she knows I love her. I said, tell her. Anyhow, it's not just blokes, but we're all so different. We get to know ourselves better, always in the atmosphere of trusting prayer. The following suggestions might prove helpful. Ready? Whatever we're feeling and whatever is happening to us, this is a suggestion. Begin by placing yourself trustingly in God's presence, in the company of Jesus. We search our memory for something, anything, however apparently insignificant, for which we can feel grateful. Having found it, let us focus on it. Savour the moment and express our thanks to God. Can we say, whatever you may do, I thank you. We open our hearts to receive God, the giver of gifts. Now, some of you, because of age and various other things, have been through difficulties, health difficulties, which are pretty hard, even life-threatening difficulties. Well, I imagine on those days you don't find much to be grateful for, I would think. And I've been through days, I can assure you, where I can't, for the foggiest heck, think of anything to be grateful for. But this is a wonderful way to begin prayer. Because from my own experience, anyhow, I never fail to find something to be grateful for. And if you do look for it, if things are black, and you look and look and look and look and look and see a little shaft of light just there, do you see what it does? It stops the dark getting darker and darker and darker. And it stops us focusing on the dark and living from the dark and plunging into the dark. Because there'll always be something today for which all of us can be grateful. I'm certain of it. Doesn't mean it's true, but I can't believe it's not true. And looking for that and starting your prayer with gratitude is a most wholesome thing. And that's the suggestion. Every day. Next, we pray to God to be able to see our day in the light of faith. We ask Jesus to look into our eyes and show us what he sees. Don't know if you can do that, but I can be absolutely sure if you could do it, you'd see immense love coming to you. That's what Mary of Magdala saw. That's what the leper saw. That's what they all saw. You would see immense love, unbelievable, for you. That's what Judas saw in the garden when Jesus embraced him. He didn't know what to do with it. He was in a dysfunctional place. He thought taking his life was the only thing worth doing because his life was worthless. Do you get it? He couldn't believe what he saw in the eyes of Jesus, and he knew what he did, so he just took a shortcut out of it. And I'm not blaming him for that. It's maybe all he could do at the time. But I'm just saying, in the light of faith, let Jesus tell you what he sees. We ask his Spirit dwelling in us to reveal to us our soul. Remembering the words of Jesus, "Blessed are the pure in heart, they shall see God." And if you can't, when you look at your soul, see the purity, you haven't looked deeply enough. You're still looking at the junk. You're looking for the spring, and all you see is what's clogging up the spring. Do you get me? But if you removed the clog, there's pure water there. The baby in you hasn't died. The little child is still there. The people your parents thought that you were the most stunning little thing that ever hit this world, and they were right, is still there. This is Christianity, by the way, isn't it? Nothing else is, so why don't we become Christians? Give it a go anyhow. Step three. How are you going? In the presence of Jesus, look back over the day at the places we've been, the activity in which we've been involved, the people we've encountered. And ask God, please show me now what you were then and what you were trying to say to me then. Because God is trying to say beautiful things to me all day. But he has to queue up. And because I've got a few things to do before I listen to that. Because I'm busy. You with me? We keep our attention on God, waiting for God to reveal what God wants to show. Now, this is a time, not a time for looking at our lives as though we're an outside observer. It's important to remember from the inside. We pray to recall the feelings, the movements of heart or lack of them. We're not simply remembering what happened this morning. We're asking the Spirit of Jesus to shine gently in our hearts and to reveal how God was present in the moments of our day, and he's always present. He's present when we had the argument. He's present when we resolved the argument. He's present when we walked in. He's present when we walked out. He's present when we had beautiful intentions, and he's present when we blurted out something we shouldn't have said that's hurt somebody. Even when the surface of our life is being whipped up by storms, there's an undercurrent drawing us into communion with God and guiding us along the right path, the Good Shepherd. Now, they're all faith statements, but that's what our faith is. So, we will recall moments when what St. Paul calls the fruits of the Spirit will be apparent. We recall moments of joy, perhaps, perhaps not, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, trustfulness, gentleness, self-control. We may or may not have experienced them, but that's likely. These are the moments when we're in communion with God and we're responding to God's love. And we thank God for those little moments. When you've had this sudden flash of thought from nowhere, why don't I ring Betty up? And you do. And you find Betty at the end of the phone crying over some sadness that's happened to Betty, and your words, the tears came because you talked to her and consoled. You just, your voice was enough to get her to release the tension. You didn't. And then you get off the phone and you think, where did all that come from? And the answer is inspiration. Simon of Cyrene. Why did he take that trip into town and not another one? It's likely, by the way, that Simon and Cyrene were told that we're told, first of all, that he had a son called Rufus. And in the letter to the Romans, this is not necessarily connected. Paul, at the end of the letter to the Romans, chapter 16, thanks various members of the community and says, oh, give my special love to Rufus and Alexander. Their mother has been like a mother to me. Now, I'm connecting dots that I've got no right to connect as a scholar, but it's not impossible that Rufus and Alexander in the community of Rome and their mother, couldn't she have been the wife of Simon the Cyrene? Certainly she could have. So who knows what happened to Simon as he carried the cross. That's how everyone's life works. We thank God for them. We recall moments when the fruits of the Spirit were absent in our life too, when we were the opposite of those. We may also recall moments when we rejected grace, when we sinned, when we followed a habitual line of self-gratification, neglecting the deep longing of our hearts. Some reason, stupid reason, we're happily married and we're married and we're happily married and we've got all this, and then suddenly something comes on TV that looks as though it'll be a bit pornographic or something, and we watch it out of this strange thing that's called sexual curiosity. Why would you do it? But maybe you did. So you've got to face it and think, that's bloody stupid, I'll never do that again, you know what I mean? Because if you don't make a resolution not to do it again, you're likely to get hooked on it, which is something that would embarrass all of us. And if anyone else was there, we'd never have looked at it, you know what I mean? So we may also recall moments when we rejected grace. These are moments when we were not in communion with God. We express our sorrow and open our hearts to God's healing and forgiving love. So it is an examination of conscience, but do you get me? It's looking at the whole gamut of experience. If something quite significant stands out, either positive or negative, and it may not, you may have had just an ordinary, simple day, well, we delay over that significant good or bad, savouring it, either for gratitude or sorrow. We're to be especially attentive if we find that something is disturbing our feelings, or if we discover that we're doing something we don't want to reveal to our spiritual director, but wish to, the person you most confide in, or wish to keep secret, dangerous stuff. Habits can be formed, and if you nip it quickly, it's okay, isn't it? We ask then to be more alert to the grace which God is certainly offering us, to continue listening attentively and to take steps to avoid the inattentive or sinful behaviour which we have observed. We finish the reflective moments with an act of longing and love, looking forward with expectation to the wonderful ways that God will be loving us in the time before the next reflection. Some of the spiritual writers suggest we do this twice a day. Well, I'm talking about 5 minutes, by the way. Not a big long program. It's just a noting thing. You might like to do it before lunch and before you go to bed. Or you might do it once a day or something. Or you mightn't do it at all. But it seems like a good thing to do, to keep your conscience tuned. Because mostly when we sin, are you like this? Mostly when we sin, a half thought comes in not to, but we don't listen. Because if you listen too long to the thought that says not to, you won't. So we generally get a bit busy and look the other way. Is that how it works? And you know, because you can't look that way. I'm sounding like an expert in sin. I think we're all human beings, so we know each other pretty well. We'll find that regular attention to the state of our soul, such as we've been describing, is essential for the fine-tuning of our spirit. It takes only a few minutes. It can save us wasting our lives in activity that doesn't come from the heart. I love this. It's the only Japanese I know besides the obvious words of geisha and kimono and a few other words. And sushi and you know whatever else. But this one you don't know. In Japanese, the expression too busy, when written in kanji, they're picture words, as you know in Chinese, they're not syllables. It's composed of two radicals, this too busy. One is heart, and the other is destruction. That's pretty powerful. Every language has got something to teach us. But if you say, I haven't got it there, but if you say isogashi in Japanese, I'm too busy, when you look at it and write it, you're saying heart destruction. It's interesting that some Japanese don't know that till you point it out to them. Just as we in English are using words all the time and we don't know what they mean. Window. Wind, ui, the eye of the wind. That's where the wind looks. Forget the glass, it shouldn't be there. It's pretty. But if the wind is looking in and saying, g'day, the eye of the wind, that's kind of nice, really. Whereas you could have looked at the word window for all your life and never realised that's what it means. So you can in Japanese. Too busy, show it to the Japanese person and they think, oh, heart destruction. So we're in a culture that is too busy. The culture's too busy. Are we destroying our heart? And when you get a Samoan community, we had 80 of them in our parish for the last week. It's not all positive, by the way, because you've got to get them organised and they're sitting around waiting for the next monsoon or something. So it's all different, and I'm not saying one culture's better than another, but I have the impression they're not too busy. So they burst into song, the least thing had filled the church and the roof was coming off and they're in two or three parts and they're just... there's something lovely about that, isn't there? Jesus challenges us, even if you gain the whole world, it'd be worthless if in doing so you lost your life. Not died, but lost your life. An unreflective life is not a life worth living. To summarise and complete, these are the steps. It's all on the internet if you want to catch it later, if you can. Place myself in God's presence and ask what I feel grateful for today. And remember it, because it'll stay if you remember it. It'll go if you don't. It'll be forgotten, washed away. 2, ask Jesus to let me see my day through his eyes. How does he see my day? And you might be surprised he sees it much more beautifully than you do, than I do. 3, ask Jesus to show me now what he was trying to show me during the day. But I wasn't listening. I was too busy. delay on anything that stands out, expressing gratitude or sorrow appropriately. Pray to be more attentive and sensitive to God's inspiration, and conclude your prayer with an act of longing and an act of love.